Welcome to another episode of Across the Pond, where we discuss the big stories and top investment ideas from the Eurozone and Switzerland. US presidents have often been cheerleaders for a strong dollar, but the current resident of the White House has been far less enthusiastic. For example, at a recent press conference, President Trump said that America would make a hell of a lot more money with a weaker dollar. And that's just what the US has been getting. The US dollar index, which tracks the dollar against six top currencies, dropped almost 11% in the first half of 2025, its worst first half since 1973. While President Trump's lack of dollar cheerleading isn't responsible, some of his other policies may have contributed. The dollar's standing as the world's premier safe haven has been called into question by uncertainty over US tariff policy, concerns over mounting government borrowing, and worries that the White House is undermining the independence of the Federal Reserve. I'm Christopher Swan.
And I'm Belinda Peters. No global investor can afford to ignore the outlook for the US dollar. So how should investors in the US and across the pond respond to a weaker greenback? And if the US dollar is becoming less attractive, which currencies should investors consider diversifying into? To help us unpack this topic, we're joined by our colleagues from the Chief Investment Office, Dominic Schneider, Head of CIO Global FX and Commodity, and Konstantin Bolz, FX Strategist.
Pleasure being here.
Thanks for having us.
So I guess the first question, the most obvious question, is like, why has the dollar had such a lousy 2025 so far? And does this matter for international investors?
Well, I think looking at the dollar weakness, I mean, it's always a question of perspective. So obviously, investor that is non-dollar based and have dollar asset is feeling the pain of a weaker dollar. So I think
that's me, for example.
Exactly. The other one is obviously, if you're probably more a dual currency investor, you think in multiple currencies, then obviously, although maybe you're one of your portfolio might be dollar reference, but you start to realize the opportunity cost by being exposed to a weaker currency. So that is important to recognize, because basically for a dollar investor, somebody living in the US, there was probably more upside given that maybe some of the assets abroad actually have appreciated. So perspective definitely matters. But coming back, I would say, to the point, what drove the weakness, I think we need to understand is the starting point often matters. And I think especially in this case here, the starting point was very rich value dollar. I mean, or an elevated dollar. If you look where it's traded on a trade weighted basis against the baskets of different currency, we were at historical highs. And so the starting point was one of richly valuation. I think on the growth side, people were looking for that exceptionalism, this 2.5% growth thereabout into 2025. And that obviously got revised down quite rapidly and caused probably one of the key reasons why we have seen here the adjustment in the dollar. What was the cause of it? I mean, you already mentioned some of the tariff developments definitely caused some concern when it comes to basically the fiscal trajectory and the growth trajectory. Now, I already mentioned the other part, which was important. I think at some point people realized, oh, what if we continue to run these elevated fiscal deficit? Because after all, somebody needs to finance that. And the reality is the US does not have enough domestic savings to do so. So reality is somebody needs to step in, help the US. And I think in general, people like to do that because look, which one is the most interesting capital market in the world on the equity side? It is the US. And when you look at where yields are among the highest in within basically the G10, it is the US. So I think that speaks a lot for it. But the reality is if things dim on both fronts, obviously people do get a little bit more concerned. And the last point maybe to worth highlighting is on the US side is that obviously this whole talk of politicizing Fed decisions definitely did not help in terms of shoring up confidence in, let's say, the dollar as a stable and as a safe haven. So I think these factors definitely contributed to the weakness. And then maybe last point to highlight, we did see in Europe a little bit of a shift, particularly from Germany, adding to more fiscal expenditure. And I think that's was a little bit of a game changer and helped in this entire, I would say, performance mix to add more thrust to European currencies. Because if you look at outside Europe, actually the performance of the dollar weakness was not as pronounced as you might think. It truly has been a European story.
And maybe diving in a bit deeper on the tariff developments you mentioned, It does seem that the worst of the trade war is behind us now. So how has the trade dispute, you know, affected the US dollar so far? And do you think these effects are likely to last?
Yeah, let's hope that the worst is behind us. I'm not 100% sure about that. But I mean, in general, what we said a year ago before the US election was that we thought that if the US picks one country at a time, that the US will always be the bigger one and that the dollar will always be stronger. And that's kind of what markets also traded right after the election, that the US dollar will be the strongest one. And what we also said a year ago is that if the US decides to take on the whole world at once, that the world's probably going to be stronger than the US and that the negative impacts on the US economy in the end will outshine it. And that's exactly what we got in April after Liberation Day, that the US really took on the whole world at once and that markets started questioning how big the negative impacts on US growth will be, if the Fed will be forced to cut. US recession probabilities have been rising quite a lot in April, May. And I think that was the moment where the trade war really started to turn against the dollar. What we've seen over the last few weeks, as you just pointed out, is that the worst seems to be behind us. We now got a few deals around 10%, 15%, 25% tariffs, which looks definitely far better than the worst case scenario of April. But and that has been dollar supportive over the last few days, at least a little bit, but definitely didn't make up for everything it lost so far this year. But I think some damage has definitely been done. And on the one hand, economic damage. So we will see over the next few quarters how big the economic damage will be on the US economy, but also reputational wise. I mean, the US as a reliable partner and as a place where your money is safe and so on. And as Dominic just pointed out, also things like that the US administration is actually calling for a weaker dollar. Things like that, I think, have raised some eyebrows, and this damage is probably not being undone quickly.
And I guess there are two sort of Fed-related questions. I mean, the first is the big issue of the day, which is President Trump keeps making very hostile comments about Jerome Powell, and that seems to have been one of the most forthright challenges to the independence of the Fed in modern times. And then there's the issue, which I think you were going towards, which is on monetary policy of, you know, is the Fed about to start resuming cutting when everyone else is stopping cutting?
Well, I would say here on that subject, let's step back a little bit. I mean, clearly, the independence of the Fed and making sure that we have a very stable inflation, but also at the same time safeguarding growth of this dual mandate has been a cornerstone behind, I would say, the success of the dollar. And the dollar is, among many other currencies, the most successful story, I would say. So clearly sacrificing one over the other, potentially, is going to come with concerns. I think we need to say that. I think, remember, I mentioned the US is not having enough domestic savings. And I think that needs to be taken into consideration. I mean, with a current account, I don't know, at 6% thereabout, sorry, that's fiscal deficit at 6% plus, but then having a current account at probably 3.5% thereabout, I think you need foreign investors looking at the US. And obviously, if you start to take that independence away, particularly when it comes to the fixed income market, that's obviously definitely something that people rings alarm bells. Now, I would say the Fed and the system generally has enough, I would say, safeguards that helps to, you know, keep policy, I would say, independent. But obviously, there is a shallow aftertaste, I would say, given if the person comes in is a very dove and obviously starts to guide or persuade other members maybe to act a little bit more quicker in terms of reducing the burdening costs when it comes to some of the deficit. And it's clear if you look at what happened in the US, I mean, the cost of servicing the debt has gone up quite rapidly. You know, we're almost 14% of total revenues. That's very, very high. It's among the highest in the world among key economies. And so obviously that is a concern. So I think the key thing we need to look at here, obviously, yes, we have safeguards in place, but what could be the potential? And I see two things where the market could be concerned. Number one is more the structural part. So we really come to the point, hey, we never want to do any fiscal adjustments. And so we're basically going to be running large deficit over a long period of time. And then you might, and then obviously you might ask the Fed, can you help us in managing these high fiscal deficits? I think if then obviously the Fed comes in and starts to help, that obviously is going to be a negative for the dollar. So I think that's one thing to look at. But that's probably would be a little bit more structural. The other part to think about is the more cyclical aspect. The new Fed chair comes in and he says, look, the policy that we have been doing so far is maybe not suitable anymore. We've been really relying on backward-looking data, take the data as it comes and then make decision one by one. I want to do a little bit more forward-looking monetary policy. And I think growth is going to slow and we need to safeguard growth. And I think in a world that probably sees a little bit more inflation, so a stagflation world and a Fed chair that leans more to support growth over price stability, that would also be a more negative element. That wouldn't fall into, I would say, the first category I mentioned, meaning this more structural risk, but that would be more a cyclical aspect and a little bit of a policy shift that, in my view, could undermine the greenback in the coming quarters.
So you already touched upon this topic a little bit, but there's also been a lot of debate about the U.S. fiscal outlook, especially following the passage of the One Big Beautiful Bill this summer. And I think the latest projections are that it will add around $4 trillion U.S. dollars to the federal deficit over the next decade. So could you maybe explain a bit more for investors why this could be a problem for the U.S. dollar?
Yeah, I mean, fiscal outlook is probably the one big beautiful bill you're talking about, or how Elon Musk quoted it, the one big disgusting bill. I guess, I mean, there are two sides, and Dominic touched on the negative side already. I think on the positive side, that's more the short-term view, is that the one big beautiful bill definitely reduced downside risks for the U.S. economy, because let's be honest, when the Republican Party took over and it has a majority in both houses, the expectation was that there will be some more fiscal consolidation. And we've heard about the Department of Government Efficiency at the beginning of the year, cutting spending and so on and so forth. And the idea was that this one big beautiful bill will potentially be rather restrictive on the fiscal side. And that, on top of the trade war issues and potential growth fears, could have weakened the economy even further. So what we got now was the final draft really showing not really a lot fiscal consolidation, budget deficit of around 7% over the next few years expected, and 7% is huge. So short-term risks for the economy are lower, that's the positive thing. But then coming to what Dominic just said, the longer term fiscal issues have just been amplified by it. And I guess the problem here is if you have a fiscal deficit around 7% and then you have high interest rates and slowing growth, that combination is not good. So high debt levels, high deficits, and then high interest rates on those high debt levels and a slowing economy brings the whole mix in a toxic area. And I mean, the past few hundred years have shown us that there have been very few governments actually saving their way out of high debt, and usually it was inflating the way out of high debt. So the likelihood that in the end the Fed will have to cut rates a little lower and thereby kind of dampening the negative impact of the high debt is the most likely outcome. And if the Fed cuts rates, it's probably dollar negative. And I think what Dominic touched on will be kind of the worst case scenario if yields really go through the roof because investors really start questioning the US debt sustainability and the Fed then steps in. That would kind of be the worst case scenario. But I would think the base case should rather be that the Fed at some point gradually lowers interest rates and that will gradually weaken the dollar.
And I guess just a quick one here that you touched, I think, Dominic, a little at the beginning on some of the reasons why the dollar is so powerful and so popular. And my understanding is that, you know, our primary assumption is that it does retain its role as the predominant global reserve currency, but admittedly not at kind of the overvalued levels that we've seen over recent years.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I think thinking about who could replace the dollar as a leading reserve currency, I think there's at this point in time not really a lot of contenders.
The Swiss franc, surely, come on.
Yeah, absolutely. I think let's maybe start first before we come to the second part I mentioned about the contender, about the dollar in itself. I think we should step back a little bit and think about, look at the world market capitalization. I mean, it's dominated by the US equity market. You look at the bond market in the US, extremely liquid. I mean, no other bond market matches what the US offers. And so I think just out of these capital market consideration and sizes and liquidity, I think there's nobody that comes close what the US at this point in time offers. The other part is, although we talk about potentially slower growth and we do have these tariffs, we should also not forget it, which economy has been reinventing itself over and over again. And I would say that's clearly the US. And so the ability to grow at that pace, even having such a high per capita GDP, is quite remarkable. Europe wasn't in a position to do so. Others have failed to also even come close. So I think that part definitely needs to be also taken into consideration. That speaks basically for the US. And I think the rule of law in these parts are also quite important, although you might think that that's a little bit changing to some degree, but I would say still also speaks there. And the last point to highlight, it's military might. Let's be clear, you as a reserve currency, you probably need to be also militarily on top. And I think there's nobody can rival the US at this point in time. So all these factors still speaks for a very strong dollar, meaning versus we don't need to go into undervalued territory. But that doesn't mean if certain pillar starts to crumble or getting less supportive, that we simply do not trade at the more richly valuation level. Now, to the alternative, I mean, you can think about Europe, and maybe Constantine can also give some thoughts. I mean, we do have a structural growth problem, even though Germany now gives us maybe in the coming years some boost. We have yet to see a Europe that can sustainably really produce a lot of growth without the help of from exports. So I think that's something we need to take into consideration. The other part, we do have probably not that unified market. You know, it's still a little bit of an amalgamation of different countries and different voices. So I think that's something that probably also does not support to be the reserve currencies. And then we do have wars on our doorstep. I think that's important. And military-wise, we're not in such a great position as we have seen as of late. So I think all these factors makes the euro the second best story, I would say. and I think we see that also right now, because when people want to diversify out of the dollar, where do you go? You do have a good bond market in Europe. Don't get me wrong. You can replicate a lot of fixed income things that you do in the US, investment grade, high yield. You can do that actually in Europe as well. So the euro is the go-to currency and it is traded freely. But I think these other factors still are a little bit of a hurdle we need to take into consideration. And I think the other currency, which was going quite nicely until we have seen different developments domestically, is China, I think. And at this point in time, it's probably still too heavily managed for many investors to say, okay, this is a freely traded currency where market forces sets the ups and downs. So I think that needs to be considered. And also maybe the conflict with the West is also another hurdle. So the best two alternatives have their own issues, and everybody else is way too small and can't be considered an alternative. Definitely not crypto. I think that's probably more on the speculative side. So while the dollar probably still going to be the reserve currency of the world, that doesn't mean its share as dominance need to be the same over the coming years. I mean, clearly China's growth ambition and trade development will speak for a greater share of the CNY, for example, in the coming years. I think that's something we need to take into consideration. And we also welcome. I think that's important. The other part, I think if Europe gets its act together and has a little bit more robust domestic story, that obviously adds flavor to the euro as well. So we're probably going to see the dollar's importance being reduced, but that doesn't really make I would say that the other currencies are a big alternative and the dollar stays dominant.
Got it. And then there's an interesting piece that you just put out, Constantine, with a few colleagues, which I thought was sort of had a longer term perspective. And I guess the point was to say, you know, that we're sort of entering a world where more people want to be currency diversified because of their life. And, you know, they might have children in living in different countries, tuition fees, houses, stuff like that. So it was a substantial piece of research. So maybe you can try and summarize it relatively quickly. But what kind of considerations should people bear in mind for sort of managing these really long term currency exposures?
Yeah, I think what you just said already gives the starting point, right? To evaluate where are the biggest expenses in the next few years and in which currencies. And clearly things have changed. We are all now global citizens, so we are not thinking about in just one currency anymore. And if you have expenses in one currency, then you actually need this currency. So if an investor has a mismatch between the currencies where they have their assets and their income and another currency where they have liabilities or expenditures, then there's a risk that at some point you can't meet the expenditures if a currency moves strongly in there in between. So in the end, it's an asset liability management question. So first thing is you have to find out where your biggest expenses will be in the next few years. And then in a second step, you should also look at the right mix to prevent larger fluctuations in net wealth and purchasing power over years and even decades. So there are some currencies which are fluctuating stronger, others which are more stable. Then there are some currencies which offer higher yields. As Dominic pointed out early on, Switzerland offers no yield at all, but more stability. So in the end, the investor has to find the right balance first to match assets and liabilities, or income and expenses, whatever. And second, then to have like a good mix to kind of get the fluctuations out of the currency mix and still earn a decent yield and so on and so forth. So those two, I think, are the main starting points.
And I suppose Chris's question is a little bit more long term. So let's say from a near term perspective, looking from 6 to 12 months, if we don't like the US dollar, which currencies do we like right now?
Yeah, I think, I mean, Dominic said it already, the dollar is the world's reserve currency still, but if you want to diversify out of your dollars, or if you just have overexposure in dollars, which many investors have after the very good run over the last few years, then the euro is the default option number one. Why? Because after the dollar, it's the second most liquid currency. It has a deep bond market, an equity market. As Dominic pointed out earlier on, you even have government bonds in 5, 6, 7 different risk categories. So in the US, the government bond market has like one risk category. In Europe, you can even get high yield in a government bond. So it's a very diverse market, and you have a lot of investment opportunities. And then last but not least, the euro now looks much better after all of those fiscal announcements. And we do expect monetary policy to be done for the time being. The ECB cut interest rates from 4.5% to 2%. This monetary impulse will be felt in the next few quarters. And now the fiscal impulse comes on top of that. So from that perspective, we really like the euro at the moment. The Swissy is always a great safe haven, and we also expect further spot appreciation. But then taking the huge yield disadvantage into account probably doesn't make it such a great total return. So from that perspective, I think with the Swissy, investors really have to think twice about it. But then talking about yield, the Australian dollar and the Norwegian crown are the currencies we like a lot at the moment. They offer high yield. In our view, there's a lot of catch-up potential there. Both pay 4% interest, have much better fiscal position than the US. Australia actually has a quite booming economy at the moment. Norway will profit from the European reflation. So those two are preferred currencies at the moment. So long story short, euro, Aussie, Norwegian crown are our preferred currencies at the moment on a 6 to 12 months horizon.
So thank you both for joining, and thanks to our listeners as well. We can delve into specific securities on these podcasts, but you can explore some of these with your UBS representative. But just to sum up here, investors should diversify currency allocations as the US dollar faces pressure from a weaker fiscal outlook, central bank diversification, and likely Fed rate cuts, increasing exposure to alternatives like the euro, Australian dollar, and Norwegian crown, and shifting USD bond holdings to euro-denominated investment-grade bonds can help reduce dollar risk and capture attractive yields. Regularly reviewing and, where appropriate, hedging US dollar exposure will help keep portfolios aligned with long-term objectives. We'll be back soon with another installment of Across the Pond, and in the meantime, have a great week.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.